Research is going to teach people about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson, I'm the Executive Director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Don't forget, please, that after you've heard the show, you can always listen to it again if you miss some information by going to the NAGB's website at www.nagb.org.bs, and you go to Learn menu and scroll down to Public Program and find Blank Canvas. You'll see a headshot of who's been on the show, a little blurb, and you'll be able to listen to the show again. And don't forget that the archive of all of the Blank Canvas shows from the last 9.5 years can be found. So it's a really great resource. If you're curious to learn more about certain practitioners or about former exhibitions at the NAGB or at other art spaces all over the Bahamas. So it's a great resource for a rainy day. And while you're on the NAGB's website, of course, please just take a look around. There are so many resources. We have teachers' resources, students' resources, videos of artists. We have learning programs, virtual tours, and of course, the exhibition program of what we have now that we're back open again. So there's always tons to do. And remember also that since Hurricane Dorian passed, the NAGB has been free every single day for any local resident of the Bahamas. So it is entirely free, and that means you and your family can come any day, Tuesday through Sunday, and enjoy everything that there is to offer. So I encourage you to get involved and to come engage with your creative community. And now we're going to go back to our special guest tonight, Keyshawn Monroe. Keyshawn, we talked a little bit about before the break. He talked a little bit about his formative years, where he's from in Ragged Island. If you are a follower of the art community, you would know that he has just won like one prize after the next. Central Bank, he won the open category 3 years in a row, 1996, 1997, and 1998. And was awarded a scholarship. And of course, the Central Bank has works of his in their collection. He's collected very widely, not just in the Bahamas, but elsewhere. He's in all of the kind of major collections here. There is actually a piece of his on view right now at the NAGB in the Medicine and Memory Show, which speaks to public health in the Bahamas, and a beautiful self-portrait. And again, he's also got work, or he did have work hanging in the Senate building. So those are just a few of the accolades, but I'd like to get right back in and talk more about his development and practice. Before the break, Keyshawn, you mentioned you were from a seafaring family. And so that suddenly made sense to me, because your practice has often been about traveling, about crossing borders, about meeting people and trying to understand our connectivity. And that now I understand it sort of as a natural progression of the work. But just tell the audience a little bit about what the universal human experience was, why you wanted to do that, because I think some people, they might know your name and they might have seen a canvas, but they might not understand like the depth of what is behind those canvases.
Okay, well, the universal human experience is actually an ongoing project that I started off in about 2008. I graduated from university in 2006. And that was when the war in Iraq and all of those conflicts were kind of rife in the air, right? And so you had issues of persons looking at you and profiling you based on your physical makeup, right? Or based on some of your actions. And so I thought that I would kind of take that to another level for myself personally, and be able to not only rely on the information that was spoon-fed to me from the media sources, but to actually go out into the world for myself and to experience the things or the situations that were being presented to me on the various screens, on my cell phone. It wasn't so much cell phones back in the day.
I was going to say, back then we didn't have cell phones. It was just television.
Social media wasn't what it is right now by far. And so if you wanted to capture video, you needed like a camcorder that would need like its own diet most of the time, right? And so what I was doing was more challenging, especially to do it more discreetly, like I planned. But basically it was that I would travel around the world documenting conflicts and resolutions, right? And to be able to come to my own conclusions, hopefully they weren't too subjective, more the results, right? Or the way that I portray things, I wanted to be less propagandistic, right? Mm-hmm. And in order to strengthen my understanding of the world and to be able to share my experiences with other persons who, like me, were interested in seeing another side that did not have the commercial roots. Attached to it. And so I did that, and I traveled mostly around the Caribbean, parts of Europe, North, Central, South America, right? I had a few very interesting experiences. I had a few near-death experiences that always kind of shape your reality on existence, right? And not only existence, but how do you communicate with people? The things that people need, the things that you need as a human being, right? And so I think it was there. It started a little more before that. It actually started during my thesis that I stopped focusing as much on authorship, right? And I started focusing a lot more on content, right? And the more I started looking into situations and the reality of things, and separating that from commercial interests or propaganda, I realized that it became much more of a spiritual journey for me, because I not only had to do what I set out to do, but my emotions, the way that I acted and reacted in my life actually affects my art. It affected my art, and so my life became my art as well. And so that's why I said it became more of a spiritual journey for me. And so I grew less interested in the glitz and the glam that's popularly associated with the art world, right? And I felt compelled to live more of a life of purpose. Mm-hmm. Like I said before, where I do things that I feel needs to be done, mm-hmm. not just the things that I think would get me attention.
Well, I think if you look at true geniuses or people that have been very successful, they're very rarely driven by what you spoke to about the glitz and the glamour. That happens, but people, like you think of a Steven Spielberg, like, you know, or even a Bill Gates, they were driven by their passion for what they did and their belief before they were in their vision before they were, and that then led to the success. So I think that's a really interesting point. And I mean, you talk about like focusing on issues that and wanting to portray them in really, I suppose, the most honest way possible. What then led you to your very famous suite of paintings that you've continued to do over time about the HMS Flamingo incident? What led you to feel that that was something that was one of these topics you really wanted to dive into so deeply, because you've really committed years of your life to that?
Yeah. Like I said, I for my project, Universal Human Experience, mm-hmm. I documented conflicts and resolutions internationally, mm-hmm. right? And so I always flew over Cuba, because Cuba is right there. It's like mm-hmm. Andes, mm-hmm. right? And so I decided I was actually getting ready to finish the South American phase of my project. So I had South America all mapped out. My bags were pretty much packed. And then I just started researching Cuba, and I came upon the Flamingo incident. And I realized that I hadn't really heard anything about the Flamingo incident, right? And then I realized that it was basically a conflict between the Bahamas and Cuba, but basically it was Ragged Island and Cuba. And the more I dug into it, the more I realized that it was the story of my family, right? One of the only persons who is documented in interview form, who witnessed the invasion, so to speak, of Ragged Island was my uncle, right?
Wow.
And so nobody ever spoke about it. I never really heard about it growing up because a lot of persons were still fearful of mm-hmm. the consequences of speaking out against a force like mm-hmm. Fidel Castro or a force like Cuba, even though we still have a very favorable relationship. And so the more I dug into it, the more people asked me, are you sure that this is what you want to do with your life? You know, this is very risky. This, maybe you should look at something else, right? And then it was only then that I knew that this is definitely something that should be investigated. Not only investigated, but sometimes it's not what you do, it's how you do it.
Yeah.
I don't think.
Yeah.
I don't think it was a project that could have been well executed by a politician or an academic just working on in the library or doing desk research. It required some real groundwork, you know, diplomacy, field work, and then documentary skills.
Yeah.
And so, and then I approached, of course, the National Art Gallery, and a date was settled upon. It was approved by you, of course, and we settled on a show date.
Yeah.
And so that's how it got on the walls of the NAGB.
Yeah, no, and it was really one of the outstanding shows of my tenure. But I think, again, like you really hit the nail on the head, which is that, you know, and this is why I'm so passionate about art, because I think it allows both the artist and the viewer to approach, it creates a space for a dialogue where you can discuss uncomfortable things in a way that maybe allows for honesty and truth that doesn't feel like an attack or that you have to get defensive. You know, I think it's a really great way of speaking about uncomfortable things, whether those are historical things, whether those are, events or underlying biases or whatever it might be, that you can create a platform where parents and children or adults or whatever can find mental space to be like, you know what? I never looked at it that way. Or, now I see that. And I think, again, you know, I remember when you were putting that show together and, you know, people were like, oh, there's going to be an international incident. But you know, that it wasn't. I think what you did so wonderfully was you invited Cuba into the conversation as well. And with, you know, having the ballerina, with traveling there. So it wasn't just a one-sided kind of, well, this is what I'm saying. It was really very clever how you invited people in to show how different viewpoints look at a topic. And I thought that's what, that was, you know, one of the brilliant parts of it.
Exactly. For me, it was a real, lesson, right? That history is not linear. History is cyclic, right?
Mm-hmm.
And especially when you speak about diplomacy, especially when you speak about politics, right? In many ways, politics and diplomacy affects us in society, and the art world is no exception to that. You do encounter significant challenges, right? Mm-hmm. And dealing with another nation, you know, a different language, different personalities, and then also dealing with persons, groups of persons, right, that you want to be on one accord aren't always on one accord. And so mm-hmm. that in itself is a lesson in diplomacy.
Yeah.
And then it goes back to purpose, self-awareness, and value. Mm-hmm. And what is it that I as an artist take from that experience? And mm-hmm. why am I doing what I'm doing? Is it all about me? Is it about someone else? Is it about us? And mm-hmm. at the end of the day, for me, it was largely to give recognition to the men who were actually on board the HMBS Flamingo, right?
Yeah.
Who
yeah.
were never in their estimate, and many others given proper recognition.
Yeah.
Right? And so for me, it's putting myself aside to a certain degree mm-hmm. and living a life of purpose and doing what I had to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and it was a very powerful show. We had a lot of visitors come in and have very moving moments there. And we can talk more about that after the break because it was an important show. And I think it's also continued to have a life of its own. The project, you know, I've seen other paintings from the cycle continuing. And I think, you know, there'll be a catalog soon. And, you know, that the life kind of continues and helps memorialize that moment. So we're here speaking with Keyshawn Monroe, who was the painter who did the amazing painting cycle at the NAGB in 2013, Swan Song of the Flamingo. But he's done so many other projects. We spoke about some of them. We're going to speak about more of them after the break. So please stay tuned and come back to hear more from Keyshawn Monroe on The Blank Canvas. You're listening to The Blank Canvas, which is on 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. We're going to be right back after this break.